And Shannon, did you just start recording? Yep, it looks like we're recording. Great, thank you. All right, so I think we can start. So welcome everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Today we're gonna be having a panel discussion. It's a continuation of last week's panel discussion, but this one will focus on circulation and ILL. And joining us today, our panelists will be Nancy Abashian from Binghamton University, Morgan Bond from SUNY Oswego, Catherine Brent from SUNY Cobleskill, Douglas Moore from SUNY ESF, and Lucy Yang from Tompkins-Cortland Community College. So I just want to give you each of them an opportunity to briefly introduce themselves. So Nancy, could you introduce yourself, please?
Tim. Again, Nancy Abashian. I am the head of reader services at Binghamton.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Morgan?
I'm Morgan Bond. I'm the resource sharing librarian at SUNY Oswego.
Thanks. Catherine?
Hi, I'm Catherine Brent. I'm currently the ILL Archives and Systems Librarian at SUNY Cobleskill, and prior to picking up systems, I did circulation here as well for about 6 years.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Doug.
My name's Douglas Moore, and my official title is Technical Services Manager at SUNY ESF.
Great. Thank you very much. And Lucy.
Hello, everybody. I am the Coordinator of Information Delivery Services at Tompkins-Cortland, which is located in Dryden, New York, between Ithaca and Cortland.
Great. Thanks, you. And thank you all for agreeing to speak to everyone today. I really appreciate the five of you helping us out with this. So I think we can just jump right in to the first question. And just so you all know how this will work, we have a series of five questions that we'll be discussing today. Not every panelist will answer every question. And if we have time at the end, which I hope we will, I'll open things up to just general open discussion. And if you have any questions in the meantime, feel free to type them into chat or unmute yourself. So our first question today is, sorry, I've got to move the Zoom window just a little bit. Will your department be providing any in-person services in the fall? If so, how do you plan to address concerns about staff and user safety? And our first panelist to answer this question will be Lucy. So Lucy, take it away.
Okay. So the answer right now is going to be yes. We are going to be providing in-person services beginning on August 31st, which is the first day of classes at Tompkins-Cortland. As far as concerns for staff and user safety, right now only current students and staff will be allowed on campus. Anyone entering the building will be required to complete a health survey. And the college will also be providing masks for all staff and students. But things that are related to the service desk, we're going to be placing some signage throughout the library. The service desk will also provide disposable masks for anybody who may need one, as well as gloves and hand sanitizers and wipes. And we also plan on staggering the number of employees that will be scheduled to work at the service desk. One thing that we're very fortunate to have is a kitchen sink located right behind the service desk. So anytime somebody arrives to work, they have the they're going to be required to wash their hands, and they can wash their hands throughout their shift as well as wash their hands when they leave. We're going to set up plexiglass around the service desk, and we have removed all supplies, pens, paper clips, scissors, pamphlets, everything from the service desk area. And we're planning on providing in-person curbside or mail to address for circulating items, and also have a return box for things like books and calculators, staplers, et cetera, things to be quarantined or disinfected. We're also working on an outdoor book drop, which is on order. So we're still waiting on that. And then as one more added safety precaution, we plan on including a receive date on ILL transactions to alert the patron of this date. So for example, if something was received today, we would indicate that to the patron so they would know that the item may not have quarantine for the 3 to 5 days as recommended.
All right, thank you, Lucy. Next up will be Douglas.
Yeah, we're a bit of a smaller library, SUNY ESF. So traditionally our circulation desk would have usually a student worker and also a reference librarian, and each would sort of help out with the other's duties as they needed. For the reference librarians, we're gonna be working from our office and using LibChat to do all the reference activities. So they'll pretty much be a circulation manager that has her own office and either a staff member or a student at the desk. Everyone is required to wear a mask. We are lucky that we already have a book drop, both at the circulation desk and outdoors. We're encouraging people to do a door side pickup, in which case we'll put it in a bag and just place the book or the loan or whatever it is right outside the library. Pretty much we are doing activities, not too different. There's nothing we're not going to loan. I know our director had some conversations with our neighbors at SUNY Upstate, and the emphasis we're trying to do with staff and users is to practice good hygiene, especially if you're going to be handling some materials or something like that. We've installed some hand sanitizer stations, and there's also hand sanitizer available at the desk. And then I just got an update today. We're trying to use, we don't have a self-checkout, but the SLSS has been working on an Ex Libris application, and it had some security concerns. But what we want to do is just set up a separate PC where a student can check out a book on their own. And until that is in effect, we also have a card reader that you can just slide your card through. We're going to put those out front so that the user can slide their card and that the circulation person doesn't even have to touch their ID. Couple other things, the printing has been changed in our library. We used to have, that's a big thing that people do. We're gonna be using a web-based solution for that. The staff members are gonna be working 4 days at the library and 1 day at home to reduce congestion. And the seating in the library overall has been reduced about 50%. We're not allowing non-users into the library, non-SUNY ESF affiliated people. And we're also going to conclude everything by Thanksgiving, all the in-person activities. So the library will be quite empty after Thanksgiving. And that's mostly the activities that we're doing.
Okay, thank you, Douglas. Next up is Nancy.
So much like SUNY ESF, we have also reduced our library seating about 50%. And are discouraging visitors, anyone who's not currently enrolled or affiliated with Binghamton, to stop in, just to limit the number of people in the building. We've had the ability to be as a staff in the building since June 15th, so we have done a lot of reorganization of our services, sort of examining all the ways in which we can avoid touching anything transactional, so no item to patron direct transaction. So we have opened up our hold shelves. Those are self-serve now. We do have a me scan, so we can do self-checkout. We are also promoting the mobile app for MeScan to try to get people to be empowered to do their own thing. We are quarantining returns. We have encased our service points in plexiglass. We're also working our staff in crews. So we have two crews. One works an in-department week, and then they're off the next week when the next crew comes in. So that we can sort of try to avoid cross-contamination as much as possible. We've examined all of our traffic flows in our lobby and have used lots of stanchions and directional signage, et cetera, to sort of manage that. We're managing elevator usage and the number of people that can get on. We've implemented a concierge desk just as you come in to ensure mask wearing, and we have a no food policy now, which is different, and to point people more directly to exactly where they need to go as opposed to them fumbling around. Again, every staff member and every student faculty on campus has been issued a hand sanitizer, a set of masks, their own cleaning cloths. So we have much like a gym sort of code of honor where before you sit, you clean it. Before you leave, you clean it. And you wear your mask at all times. And there are refilling stations for our hand sanitizers just out in our lobby. So people will never be without. Our reference is primarily virtual now. And we are setting appointments for other library account things. So anytime we can direct someone to have a phone call or have a Zoom chat or to set an appointment so that protections can be ensured, we do that.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. And last up for this question is Catherine.
Hi, so we're doing most of our full circulation, although we're using closed stacks. So we've got on-shelf holds enabled, so that's actually getting more use this first week of classes than I expected it to. They found the button on their own. Reference, we're doing a mix of in-person or on-call, partially based on who's comfortable sitting at the desk. The biggest changes, we're checking out study tables and computers this year. So that's the biggest change for CERC because our student workers at the front desk are managing that for the most part. They're bookable in Alma. That's been a trial and error process, but mostly it's been first come, first serve. Most people aren't bothering to book ahead of time. So all staff on campus have been issued masks. We have an option of face shields for our front desk people. Most people are opting not to wear them because they're kind of unwieldy. The campus does have a mask policy. If you're not in your office alone, you wear a mask. And students, if they're not in their dorm rooms, wear a mask. What else? All of our soft seating has been moved to closed areas. Our second floor is closed right now because that's harder to clean. There are cleaning supplies out when they check in to get a computer or a table. They're given the instructions, wipe down before, wipe down after. That's been going really smoothly, actually. We really haven't had any pushback on that or masks. And we spread out our spaces for social distancing. We previously had all of our computers were in a bank, and the tables were able to be spread out. And it actually looks a lot nicer now. It looks more welcoming. So we kind of are taking that as a bonus from all of this.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. And before we move on to the next question, we've got a couple of questions in chat. Nikki Colello from Buffalo asked, and this is a question specifically for you, Nancy, are students staffing the concierge desk or full-time staff?
Right now, since our students aren't back, that has been our primary desk, and we've run our Bartle to go service from there, so it's all staff. And as the students return, we anticipate the first 2 weeks at least to be staff only, so that we, you know, the authorities are sitting, for lack of a better word, are sitting there and having those conversations as students are coming through the door. Students will be working at our and I'm talking about our primary library, Barta Library. Our students will be operating other services like circulation reserves, et cetera.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Nancy. So the next question is from Ken Fujiuchi. I don't know if this is for anyone specific on the panel, so I'll just open it up to everyone. Are you recording visitor logs for contact tracing? And if so, what process are you using?
We aren't at Cobleskill, but pretty much everybody who comes into the building at this point is either going to have some kind of CERC transaction or have an appointment with the instructional designer on the second floor. So we should be able to find out pretty easily if we need to find out if someone was in the building.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Anyone else on this one?
We are not at Binghamton doing visitor logs. There's too many through the door and not, you wouldn't know where they went in the building.
Okay, so the next question is from Louise Charbonneau. She's just wondering, is anyone having open stacks?
Binghamton stacks will be open. As I said, the seating up there has been thinned by 50%, so we're hoping that people will be in and out and it's not hanging out.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Anyone else want to address that?
Yes.
Go ahead, Doug.
SUNY SF, our stacks are open. Pretty much our library is all on one floor and it's got an open floor plan, so it just seems like it's untenable to close the stacks.
Okay, thank you, Doug. And go ahead, Lucy.
At Hopkins Cortland, as of now, yes, our stacks are going to be open as well.
Okay, thank you. And one more question from Noah. Are you using a people counter or some other method to limit capacity? So anyone have any thoughts on this?
We talked about it at Cobleskill, but since we're checking out basically where you can sit and we have a way to track at the desk if there's anywhere left, we'll know when we're full at CERC without having to manually count constantly.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
At SUNY Oswego, we are supposed to have a reserve system that should only allow X number of students in, and they have to reserve and sign in as they come in the doors. We don't have that set up yet, but it's supposed to be coming soon.
Okay, thank you, Morgan. Any others? And Christy Lee mentioned in the chat, New Paltz is going to use an access booking system to track capacity. All right, so let's move on to our second question. Will you be providing physical reserve, equipment lending, or group study room services in the fall? If so, what will those services look like? And the first person to answer this question will be Catherine.
Okay, so physical reserves we are not providing this fall because we're doing the 3-day quarantine between users for books and other circulating items. So we are lending equipment, but we have set aside space for equipment to quarantine before it goes back out. Group study rooms we're not doing right now because they're on our second floor, and rather than try to we'd need somebody up there to make sure people were where they needed to be. So for the moment, they're closed. We've said if things go well this fall, we'll consider expanding and opening some of that back up, but we really have to see how it goes. Reserves, we've been working with faculty for alternate options. We added digitization in Alma for this fall. And so I've already had one request for a chapter copy from something that used to be on reserve and is now not. So that's how it's going so far.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Next up is Nancy.
We will be providing physical reserves. We do have classes being taught on campus. And so we will be serving those classes with that physical collection. Unlike our regularly circulating collection, which will be in quarantine, we did buy a UV book sanitizer. So the return transaction will be us guiding a patron through discharging that book from their record and inserting it into the book sanitizer where the book hangs and the fan blows open the pages and it gets the UVC treatment. And then we're able to reshelve it and get it back into circulation as necessary. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good. Equipment lending is on pause right now. It would be problematic to try to quarantine that for the required period, so we just suspended the service. We're sort of anticipating that many patrons will probably be maybe reluctant to borrow that equipment. So we're going to wait and see what is the demand. And once we know that, we'll revisit how we do that safely. And our group study rooms, this was a little bit of a conundrum, but working with our public health working group on campus, it was determined that we could put or allow two people per study room. And we require that they use the reservation system in order to do that, so that it's one, so that they don't start camping, and two, we can, this is where we do have the opportunity to do a little bit of contact tracing if we want to get it down to that that level of a room in the library. So two people in a group study room at a time must be reserved.
And Nancy, just a quick follow-up question. What software are you using to handle those reserve requests for your group study rooms?
We take all our requests, for the group study rooms, we use LibCal.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, so next up is Lucy.
Okay, so we are not loaning out study rooms, and we are not loaning physical reserve textbooks. But we are looking into some kind of controlled digital lending. We are loaning calculators and phone chargers. When they're returned, we do have some Clorox wipes, or we also ordered one of those UV oven type of sanitizers, kind of like the ones that you see in the nail salons where they put the nail clippers and things like that. And the college also is loaning equipment such as laptops and Wi-Fi hotspots to students who need them.
Okay, thank you, Lucy. So any other comments or questions about physical reserves, equipment lending, or group study rooms? Okay, doesn't look like we have any questions, so I will move on to question number three. How has COVID impacted the resource sharing services you provide to your users and to other libraries? And the first panelist to answer this question will be Morgan.
So at the moment, we are quarantining items for 4 days. Soon we'll probably move to 5 days. So that's kind of slowed down our turnaround time quite a bit. Staff are all being rotated in and out of the ILL office, which means some work might have to wait for another staff member to come in, and it's kind of slowed down our intercommunication between each other. And I think one of the largest changes is because of the budget cuts. We're not sure if we can do any purchase on demand. It also means that with our credit cards being shut off, we may not be able to ship things via UPS. So those things are still being looked into, and we're changing daily. Another big thing for us is we found that when we're looking at lenders and trying to build a lender string, we have to look at a lot of lenders individually in the policy directory just to see, you know, are they actually lending right now? What days do they have for turnaround? Is it 2, 4, 12, 20? And in some cases, we found that things are coming back unfilled even if they have a 4, 10-day turnaround time.
Great, thank you, Morgan. And just a quick follow-up question. When you said you're quarantining materials for 4, possibly 5 days, is that the material you're sending out to other libraries or the material you're receiving from other libraries or both?
Those are the items that we're receiving from other libraries. So we have a book truck with separate bins that are all labeled Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so on throughout the week. And then after the four And again, soon 5-day quarantine has passed. We pull that in the office and open it up.
Okay, thank you. So the next panelist to answer this question will be Lucy. So Lucy, take it away.
Okay, so COVID has definitely affected our ability to borrow materials in a timely manner. For example, you just never know, or you have to look into what libraries are lending. Some are still coming up. And so it would take a little bit longer than expected. And then there's also issues with delivery services. Somebody else mentioned too that with budget cuts, we have been fortunate enough to have our library clerk in the building since March, but his time in the building has been somewhat limited based on restrictions that we've had within the college. So as we start to open, I'm hoping that we see a big change in that. But yeah, COVID has definitely impacted resource sharing.
All right, thank you, Lucy. And out of curiosity, are you quarantining materials at all when you receive them?
We have been so far, but as we start to open, I mean, before we were closed, we're still in the process of opening. So yes, so when we do receive the items, we do quarantine them. And by the time we get it to the patron, it had already been quarantined, you know, for a few days. And at the time it was like 3 days. And so we have been, yeah. But as we move forward, we had made the decision to let the patrons know when the item was actually received, because, you know, it's only going to delay the process for when the item when the patron receives the items.
Okay, thank you. So next up for this question is Catherine.
So other than stuff is slower, for us, not much has changed. We're quarantining our returns, but the borrowing items we get, I generally check what date they shipped, and if it's been long enough, I don't worry about the items inside the bags. I'm just careful about how we take them out of the bags. What else? We've changed our checkout for Iliad items. We were doing signature slips still. Our Iliad, we don't load patrons, and we don't use LDAP for it, so patrons have been setting up their accounts for the past 15 years. So since we're letting go of the signature slips now, if their usernames don't match, I am creating them new accounts and sending them the information for that and merging their accounts so they will check out correctly in Alma. So that's a change for maybe, I don't know, 3% of our users. But other than things being slower, it's mostly up and running like normal at this point for us. I am getting a lot more textbook requests though, because we don't have reserves.
And just out of curiosity, are you trying to fill those or are you canceling those?
I'll try it, because you never know if it's something that somebody had on reserve before and maybe their professor's not using that this semester now. I'll go ahead and try it.
And how much luck are you having so far with those?
I don't know yet, because we're 4 days in. So
yeah, fair enough.
Find out. Usually I can get about 85% of the textbooks that students request.
Oh, good. Thank you. All right, thanks, Catherine. So next up for this question is Nancy.
I will just echo that turnaround is slow. We are fully operational right now. One of the bigger workflows or heavier lifts for us is scanning and getting that stuff out the door. We've upped the number of scanners in the department to be able to accommodate some of that volume. I would say that we have always been very communicative with our patrons, but that work is also busier as we try to negotiate the expectations that our patrons have as we try to get what they need in a timely manner, but not in the timely manner that they wish to receive it. Just a word about quarantining, lending, things that are going out on lending typically are because of the time we anticipate they'll spend in transit. we're not quarantining before we send, and anticipate that what we receive by the time it gets to the hold shelf, and now they are on our open hold shelf for self-checkout, when they arrive, they will have spent enough time in quarantine to be into circulation.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. So any questions about resource sharing or any further comments from the panelists? Anything anyone wants to say? So we got a question in chat from Ken Fujiuchi. Sorry to bring up contract tracing again, but it's something we are struggling with. So regardless of logging, how are your libraries planning to provide the 48-hour logs of everyone who entered your site? And how are you coordinating with the rest of your campus? So does anyone on the panel have any insight they can provide here?
Well, I will say that there is a QR code system at Binghamton that students are supposed to be responsible for scanning themselves into any particular location, maybe walking into a classroom or and so on. But so the responsibility is not on us.
Great, thank you, Nancy. Anyone else have any comments on this?
Staff at Cobble Skill have to report their presence on campus any day that they're on campus, because some people are doing a mix of on campus and at home, and that's partly so facilities knows which office to clean which day. But they, so for staff, they'll be able to tell, you know, yeah, you were in the building this day. Students, though, we've been told that we don't need to keep track of, you know, every student that walks in the building. We're effectively doing that through circulation of spaces, but every time we've asked our administration about it, they've said we don't need to keep a paper log or even electronic.
Great, thank you, Catherine. Anyone else?
We're still waiting for some more guidance as we speak. I think we're gonna have another meeting the end of this week, which I guess is tomorrow. The other thing that we did implement was we did put up a security camera at the service desk, which is new since it's a public space. Hopefully that will help with some other, you know, security issues as well. But as far as actually recording who comes in, we don't have anything in place for that yet.
Okay, thank you, Lucy. And I see we've got a question from Teresa Ronning. Are you scanning textbooks? Basically about textbook scanning. I'm gonna hold on to this question for just a few minutes because we are about to talk about copyright. In fact, let's move on to that next question. How is your library interpreting fair use in light of COVID? So first up for this one is Nancy.
So I guess just generalizing, I would say we are interpreting fair use generously. I think our first, we follow the standard protocols that we always have. The first question is, do we own it? If we do own it, then our consideration is, if we own it in a physical capacity, then it's a question of how much of this book do they want, and how can we break it up in such a way that it is not completely all available all at one time in a downloadable format. So maybe it's a chapter or you know, we play that by ear, get it digitized. We also pay pretty close attention to the reading assignment schedule so that we can sort of align its access with the week that it's due. So we just won't put up a whole work at any given time. The next question we ask, of course, is if we don't own it, can we get an e-version of it? And when we can, we will purchase it. However, we won't purchase a physical item just to digitize a portion of it. So we will purchase an e-version if we can get a hold of it. And if we can't get an e-version, we won't buy a print version to digitize it. And after that, it's searching for free or cheap versions and trying to navigate that, looking at price per use. If it's far cheaper for the 50 people in the class to each buy their own version, we point them in that direction. We point them at the public library, OverDrive, and other services that might be available in that arena. And then, like I said, if it's multiple chapters or more than, a percentage or 100 pages in a book, we really do treat it on a case-by-case basis and try to limit access to just that which they need at any particular given point in time. I will say that, for us, digitizing any more than we have to is a very unsustainable practice. Given our staffing at the moment. But we are lucky to be able to work with both. I mean, we loop in our bibliographers and our and the faculty or instructor and try to come up with whatever a mutually agreeable solution within the parameters of the law are. And we are also very interested in getting controlled digital lending off the ground for this reason. It seems as though it is in order to serve, the online instruction, especially, it's going to be absolutely necessary. And I will also say that one of the biggest problems that we have is coming up with streaming solutions for video. So I don't have a solution necessarily, but I will say that it is a big problem as far as what is the most stuff that we can't satisfy.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Next up is Morgan.
I won't speak to what our circulation people are doing. I know they have a lot of projects in place that control digital lending, but on the resource sharing side, we've definitely pushed the 10% or one chapter rule more frequently and by a larger margin than we ever have, just because we know that our patrons don't have access to these things physically. Our thoughts are, they don't have access to it, so if we can give them at least an extra chapter, an extra 10 or 20 pages, we'll do it. But that's specifically for our patrons and if we own things. For other libraries, when we've had requests come in, we've pushed the envelope a little bit more than we used to, but we're still trying to stick to that 10% rule. For our patrons, we're also not scanning textbooks that we would normally have on reserves. We're actually forcing them to talk to their professors who need to set up what percentage or what portions of the textbooks they need scanned by a reserves department. So we're kind of hands off on that part.
Okay, thank you, Morgan. And earlier, Teresa Ronning had asked, are you scanning textbooks? How are you reconciling with copyright and impact on market? Does anyone, I know Nancy and Morgan have already talked about this. Does anyone else on the panel want to talk about scanning textbooks? Is it something you're doing or is it not a practice you're engaging in right now?
At Cobble Skill, we're not doing it, and it's not even for, taking a look at the copyright considerations. We just don't have the staff.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Anyone else?
At Tompkins Cortland, we have scanned a couple of chapters to get students going while they were waiting for their textbooks to arrive. And then we've worked with the faculty members, and what they have done is they have put the chapters on Blackboard so that all the students could access the same thing. But that's as far as we've gotten with that.
Okay, thank you. So some other questions in chat. Stephanie has asked, and this isn't necessarily for the panelists, I think it's just a question for everyone here in general. Is anyone else interested in joining HathiTrust? Binghamton is currently pursuing a membership, and the University at Buffalo is the only other SUNY member. So if that's something you're interested in doing, I would either reply to Stephanie in chat, or Stephanie, maybe you want to put your email in chat so you can initiate a conversation that way. Mila mentioned that there is no 10% rule. Using fair use allows for more flexibility. Yes, that is true. The 10%, it's really a guideline, and I have to admit, I'm not even sure where that 10% originated, but it certainly, it is not law. Stephanie Helscher asked, is anyone deciding to pay royalties / copyright fees or scans in excess of what you believe to be fair use? So do any of our panelists have any thoughts on that? So if you are pushing the envelope or, you know, going, you know, well past that normal line you wouldn't cross, are you paying any royalty fees or copyright fees?
Not at Binghamton. It's probably been 10 years since I've pursued a fee like that. And when I did do it, it was very time consuming for very little return. I didn't always get a great response, or a response, period.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. And I have to say, back when I was at Albany, the handful of times I did that, that was my experience as well. It was very time consuming, and often I just wouldn't get any response at all. Does anyone else on the panel want to address Stephanie's question? Okay, so I think we are, we can move on to our last question for the day. How do you think COVID will impact your circulation and resource sharing services in the long term? So beyond the fall semester. So first up for this question is Doug.
Yeah, our situation at SUNY ESF is, we're pretty much, we use Iliad for all our resource sharing. And part of that was because we had a problem where our identifiers with Alma and our Iliad didn't match up. But the other thing was just for our ILL librarian, she wears a lot of different hats. And it was sort of the simplicity of trying to keep all the requests in one location. Of course, Iliad is on a time scale, and we realize that it's going to disappear. So part of our thing is to work towards including resource sharing borrowing, and then looking for the next system that we're gonna move to. One of the big things is we're wondering that the expectations of most students and faculty and staff from now on are gonna be that they should be able to get all materials electronically. We've already seen a rise in the book chapter request. And of course that requires quite a bit of labor. We've been attempting to try to do it whenever possible. And, our director has stated that he would consider paying some copyright fees, but we really just don't know that the funding is going to be there. So moving forward, it almost seems to me like there's going to be less of an emphasis on the physical materials. Right now, the Moon Library at ESF is probably the center of student collaboration. The place is usually jammed. People like to eat there. They do all their activities there. So obviously that whole thing is going to change. And as it changes, we just think there's going to be more of a move to getting everything electronically. So that's a problem because our budget has gone down for several years now. The immediate impacts of COVID haven't been felt yet, but I think it's wise to say that the budget will probably continue to go down. So we already have a fairly bare bones staff. We utilize students for a lot of activities, including an ILL for help with scanning and processing requests. Of course, that's a problem this year. We don't have a work study and temporary services budget. We just don't know who we're gonna get. And plus some of the students that we've already trained won't necessarily be back on campus. Some of them are choosing to do everything online. Some other things I've seen, we're reducing the hours that were open this semester. And of course, once this crisis is over, I question, it'll certainly be up for debate whether we will expand back to our old hours or continue with the shorter hours. And just overall, I see our collection in particular, we have a lot of runs of bound periodicals. At the moment, one of the large buildings on our campus, Marshall Hall, is undergoing a complete renovation. And so SUNY ESF, we have more land than any other SUNY school, but our central campus is quite cramped and there's a need for space. So I think I continue to see that our physical collection is just going to continue to decrease. Physical circulation is going to continue to decrease. And then we're going to have some tough questions regarding staffing versus having the subscriptions and material available on a general basis. So definitely some difficult times ahead.
Okay, thank you, Douglas. So next up is Catherine.
So like Doug, I do think that we will see a hit to our long-term physical circulation. So the last time we had closed stacks, which has been, almost 15 years, we had electrical work done on the second floor. And so the whole second floor was closed for the fall semester. Everything was covered with plastic because they were redoing the electrical on the roof. And we were offering, you know, we'll pull books for you. Our circulation numbers dropped sharply, but they generally rebounded the next year. It took a little bit, but they did come back up. But I'm curious, this time with the vast increase in digital resources, you know, if we'll see that rebound again in the physical circulation. Not having reserves or study rooms this year is going to be a huge drop in our circulation because those are both a huge part of our circulation. But those, I think, will come back up as soon as we offer them again because they're both high demand services. And the last thing for a long-term impact is if any of our faculty find OER that they like to replace reserve content, they might stick with that and we might actually see less faculty demand for physical reserves. So all of those, I will be curious to see what the effect is. Despite not being the circulation librarian for 6 years now, I still do all the circ stats and I still do presentations on the circ stats. So I, depending on what the numbers look like, there might be a poster from me sometime next year at some conference, seeing what our trends look like. So I'll be very curious to see what the long-term impact is.
Okay, thank you very much, Catherine. So next up is Morgan.
So I think long-term, the budget cuts are going to be one of the hardest things to deal with. In the past, if we weren't able to get items for free, we would usually work with the students or faculty members, if they really needed something, we would either purchase journal issues, pay the copyright fees or IFM fees, or we would try and purchase a book if it was like a book chapter or something. I don't see our budget increasing anytime soon, so I think we're really going to have to work with less money and we're going to unfortunately have to tell people no, we can't get some of these things for them anymore. We're also looking into ways to save money, looking at different software options. I'm going to kind of say the same thing that Doug was saying earlier. You know, we've been using Iliad. We are using Alma, but we've started looking at other options that are out there. And I don't know if we would have looked as seriously or looked to move as quickly as we might be if it weren't for COVID. I also think our turnaround times are going to take a while to really rebound. Hopefully that will be more short term than the other things. I'm also expecting, this might be kind of a good thing for us, but I'm expecting more document delivery requests. We've been offering that for students, faculty, and staff for quite a while. You know, if they want something in our stacks, we'll go pull it, we'll scan a chapter or two. But really only a few faculty members have taken advantage of that service and we have seen a few more people start using that. So hopefully we'll continue to see increases in our document delivery requests now.
Okay, thank you very much, Morgan. So anything else from any of the other panelists or any questions from the audience about the long-term impact of COVID on circulation and resource sharing?
So I do agree with everybody related to the budget cuts. I'm sure that will be a challenge for everybody. But on the other end, as a user, I think that we're going to have to rethink how we serve students in the long run. I think that students will come to expect to receive things at their doors, doorsteps, or receive things electronically. So I think we're going to have to rethink things. And I feel like the last 6 months or 5 months, we've been constantly trying to rethink how we can serve patients. And I think that is something that's going to continue. We're going to have to constantly rethink, you know, how these patrons, how the students expect to receive their items. And I think it's going to be very different.
Okay, thank you, Lucy. Anyone else or any questions? Okay, doesn't look like we have any more to say about this particular subject. So we've got about, we got 7 minutes left. So I'm just gonna open things up for general Q&A. So if anyone has any questions, go ahead and ask. Oh, we got a big one.
While we're waiting on the first question, I just want to plug that next week we will be talking to instruction and reference librarians on our COVID reopening panel.
Thank you, Jennifer. So we do have a question from Nikki at Buffalo. Is anyone planning on gathering stats on user behaviors in the libraries, such as number of users wearing and not wearing masks, social distancing, etc.? If so, how are you planning to do this? We've been open limited hours this week, and of the 20 users in the library, 11 were not wearing masks, even after they were told to wear their masks. We're trying to figure out the safest way to gather these statistics. Any suggestions are welcome. So if anyone on the panel or anyone in the audience has any thoughts, feel free to share them.
Yeah, SUNY ESF, we're just making it an absolute requirement. You can't come in the library if you don't have a mask. You can't stay in the library if you're not going to wear your mask. There's one exception is we have some vending machines, and there's just a couple tables opposite those where if someone wants to eat there, that's the only permissible place they can't wear their mask.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Any other thoughts about that from the panelists or anyone else?
Tim at Plattsburgh, the tech folks are working on, we have the everyday sign-in that you're going to be at work, the COVID-19, that you're safe to come on campus. Our tech people are working on that this would be the first thing anyone who is on campus logging into a computer that's open, that they would have to fill out that form at that time. We have a our policy on face masks is that if you see someone not wearing one, a gentle reminder that they're not alone in the universe. And then if there's a refusal, it can go forward to UP or another authority area to make sure that that is being done. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Were you done there, Mila?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And Christina Pope mentioned in chat that they are counting who is and is not wearing masks when their staff do walkthroughs of their building. So Aaron Wilburn asked, for those who have staffed with students, is anyone else waiting to hear about the federal work study situation? Do you have alternative plans / staffing models if work study students are not available? So would anyone like to answer that question?
We got a lower allotment of work study students at Cole Skill for the library. I think we have 8. And of course you get limited hours because you know it's a set amount of dollars for them. But we told the campus if we don't have X number of students for staffing, we can't keep the building open. So they're giving us enough student worker budget money to make sure we can stay open. We're open only Monday through Friday, 7 to 5 right now, which is a dramatic drop in hours for us. But we made it clear if we don't have students, the building is not going to be open, and they've at least met the minimum they've needed to.
That is a similar experience to Binghamton's. We did receive our allotment and reported that if we did not, you know, we needed X number of bodies or there was no extended hours. And we were granted enough to keep our locations open to a reasonable evening hour.
Yeah, SUNY ESF, my understanding is this still a big mystery and hopefully one that will be resolved soon because we're opening next Monday. But yeah, we do not know about work study and we do not know about funding for temporary services for our students. I mean, it's anticipated that something is going to happen, but I guess in the meantime, we're going to rely on staff to cover positions until this is sorted out.
Great, thank you. And Mila had mentioned in chat that Plattsburgh does have work study, but they do not have any temp services. So they're looking at a situation with reduced numbers and they may have to change their hours. So Jeff Goldstein asked, how are your staff feeling about reopening and how are you dealing with the emotional component of reopening? So does anyone have any thoughts on that?
I think that the staff runs the gamut. You know, it's a very personal way of being about this particular problem, and there are varying levels of comfort as a result of that. So I think dealing with it requires a lot of communication, and it also requires a lot of looking at the ways in which you can accommodate the things that do make them comfortable. So in the event that you can maybe reduce the number of hours that they spend at a public service desk, maybe there are, we have had volunteers from other departments who are comfortable with that. And I very much appreciate that they've been willing to donate some of their time to fill in where others may not feel so comfortable. You know, it's a touchy subject, but also, you know, I think you have to also, if your students are willing to come back and willing to follow the rules as well, sometimes you have to just say, well, I'm going to give you that responsibility. I don't have the staff, or, you know, you sort of have to look for creative ways to keep the lights on and keep the operations going and honor the way that they're feeling to the extent that you possibly can.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. And Joe Riggi has a question. How has work from home impacted your reopening plans? Have most of your staff indicated they will return to cover the beginning of the semester?
We only have one person working from home right now, and they're somebody who is planning to leave us in 3 weeks anyway, so it's not a huge impact on us because we've already been planning to work around that schedule. We also have someone out on maternity leave, which was also anticipated. They won't be here.
Yeah, SUNY ESF, we've been sort of doing a gradual buildup. When this first happened in March, we were all listed as essential employees so that we had the opportunity to come in if we needed to. But most of us were only coming in 1-2 days a week. We've since gradually gone up to 50% of our days spent on campus. And once we open next Monday, we're going to be going 4 days on, 1 day work from home. No one's objected so far to this schedule. So we're just doing the best we can and trying to stay safe.
All right, thank you. So I know we're at time, but we've got one last question from Mila. Curious if other libraries were able to get filters in their HVAC system. So does anyone have anything to share in that department?
I know that our faculty have asked administration on campus this at the various forums that they've done. And all the reassurance that we've gotten is that we are meeting or exceeding the state's required air exchange guidance. I doubt that they've changed any of the filters due to the nature of our air handling systems. And it's still 79 in my office, so I'm not sure what the air conditioning looks like anyway. So.
Yeah, SUNY SF, from the facilities department, they told me that they were able to change out the filters and upgrade them to number 13. Custodians have cleaned and wiped all the air vents throughout the library. And in addition to that, they're going to run like a 2-hour flush before the library opens and then an additional 2-hour flush after the library closes with the idea of replacing all the air in the library.
All right, thank you. So we're at time, so I think we can go ahead and end things for today. I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to our panelists, Nancy, Morgan, Kathryn, Douglas, and Lucy. I really appreciate you all sharing your experiences and your expertise, and I'm sure everyone in the audience does as well. So thank you all very much. And thank you, everyone, for attending. We'll get a recording of this